Cultures around the world have always looked to nature as a source of both increased health and wellness. While modern science continues to support this connection, we spend the majority of our time indoors. Welcome to the Nature of Wellness podcast, where we explore the relationship between the natural world and the human experience. Join us as we discuss all things nature, health, and well-being. We truly believe the future of health is now.
Welcome to another episode of the Nature of Wellness podcast. I'm Dr. Mark Campbell, and with me is one of my favorite people, someone who loves the planet. When others don't, he just can't stand it. As cool as an 80s movie Camaro, my favorite co-host, Mr. Steve Otero. How are you, Steve?
I am thoroughly impressed. That's how I am, sir.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. That was sweet. You're a true poet.
Well, I like to think that I am an ad hoc poet without much skill. I keep trying. Maybe someday I will. There you go. I'm just a big fan of the written word, as you know. How are you, pal? How's it going?
Doing well. Full spring swing over here, finally. Lots of snow melt, lots of wildflowers popping up, the daffodils, the tulips are out. Kind of like a key indicator for us to be tending to the garden, cleaning up the yard. Ready for rafting season here. So, I'm pretty stoked. I have a trip coming up. I've got a week out on the Yampa, out in Dinosaur National Monument coming up. So I'm very, very much looking forward to that. Yeah. So, just an exciting time of year. How's the East Coast?
I love it. It's blazing hot by now. But it's good. It's fun, outside a lot more. Just keep getting outside as much as I can. Had a really cool experience I want to mention. I talked about this on our Instagram page in a post and story, but something really serendipitous happened with a couple of our guests. Last week, I was invited to tour the Department of the Interior with Captain Sarah Newman. And
It was,
during National Parks Week. So I had a chance to go there and meet with Captain Newman. And it just so happens that Eric Cedeno was in town for a different event. So I was able to pick Eric up at his hotel and meet him and take him to the Interior Department for this tour with Captain Newman. And to make it even cooler, we were able to do that on the eve of when they were transitioning from her episode to his episode. So that was really cool. Yeah, the stars were aligned. It was just amazing to meet both of them in person. They were just as advertised on the show and in our recording, just beautiful humans. And I couldn't be happier about that. But it was so cool to see the Interior Department, to see Office of Indian Affairs, National Park Service, Reclamation. It's just such a historic and beautiful building. And the view from up top was spectacular.
Yes, they took you to the roof.
Oh, it was amazing. And I know she's listening. So, Captain Newman, thank you so much. And we'll have to get Steve there next time he's in town, because I fully intend on coming back and hanging out. And I just want you to know, and for Eric to know, that it was such a special day. I'm so happy that you were both part of it. So thank you for that. And speaking of special days, Steve, I'm going to turn this back on you for a second. We've alluded to this a few times in past episodes that you were a student finishing your master's. But brother, you're done. Congratulations, man.
I am done. Thank you. I defended my thesis on Monday. That was cool. Very interesting experience. I've been looking forward to it for 6.5 years. Anybody who's ever been a student, right, at all, it's nice to finish up and know, hey, we did it. We put in our time, our effort, and any student has worked very hard to try to reach those milestones, and that's part of my actual celebration, I guess, will be out on the river on that Yampa river trip. Really looking forward to that. And then, just a dinner out with the family is the way I'll celebrate, with my crew. So,
and if you could just for a second, if you wouldn't mind, we've talked about you finishing school a couple times, as I said, but just for the listeners, can you talk for a minute about what your degree was in, what you've done with it so far as a student, and what you're planning to do moving forward?
Sure. So I started school 6.5 years ago, and I triple majored in undergrad, exercise physiology, exercise science, psychology, and outdoor education. And so I, combined those disciplines to then funnel into a behavioral science master's, so an MS in behavioral science. And I actually pivoted from my focus. I've really been studying a lot of the physiological components of nature-based interventions for the vast majority of my academic career so far. And for the final year, I ended up becoming very, very curious about the health and wellness of our young people who potentially might become military recruits. Not that I'm not pushing anybody or advocating for either or, join the military or don't join the military. However, I'm very concerned about the health of our youth, our young population under the age of 30, and a healthier young population oftentimes will lead to a healthier aging population. So I researched some of the health and wellness needs of the under 30 crowd, and I conducted some online research, email-based surveys, and you know, was able to analyze a variety of results. I did do a quantitative analysis on the data that I received, and as a snippet of it, I mean, you know, folks will benefit from more professionalized healthcare education, right? How to care for oneself and how to feel comfortable making health decisions for oneself, right? Because there's so many differences in the way people find joy in their self-care, right? I think finding joy as a part of self-care is really what helps us continue, right? It helps us to choose to continue with the behaviors, whatever choices we're making. If we find some joy, some happiness, some excitement in it, right? We don't want it to be a grind. It shouldn't necessarily feel like a grind, even though some people label it like that, right? Maybe some of the hardcore gym goers or that type of crowd might label it a bit of a grind, but if we find joy in it, we're much more likely to continue, right, with those healthy choices, those healthy behaviors. And so whether or not it's just all physical stuff or, you know, more mental stuff, either or both, right, should eventually combine to help us be well-rounded in a healthy sense. And so I guess a key takeaway for me was, you know, discovering that what a lot of the military basic training programs are doing right now, right? Like the Army has a 6-week pre-basic program where they welcome potential recruits and they're seeing like a 97, 98% success rate with all the folks that they welcome in the one of these 6-week programs. They started with one site at Army Basic and now they're expanding to 3 sites this year. And at each of these 3 sites, they're welcoming potential recruits with a 6-week sort of coaching based experience. And they're preparing them for what basic training actually is. And so to me, that just seems to make a lot more sense, right? Because we have a very motivated young population, but some of them maybe have just different, you know, experiences in regards to what healthy behaviors are in their adolescence. And so if we could welcome people with less harsh, you know, knife handing, yelling and screaming and say, hey, look, we'll get to the knife handing, the yelling and the screaming part. But for this next 6 weeks, right, we're going to be focused on building you up, helping you build yourself up to be ready for the stress of basic training. And so I really appreciate this model. I like this model. And that was, you know, sort of a theme in my own research is trying to figure out, okay, well, what do these young people need in order to feel like I'm going to be able to make it to the next step? You know, and a lot of us are just more prone to adapting our behavior when we're welcomed into a system rather than like screamed at into a system. You know, some of us can thrive through the screaming and the shouting initially, but dare I say, maybe this generation of youth has just been raised in a different way because of technology, you know, and technology has been used as a platform for a lot of their interventions, a lot of their education has come through technological platforms. And so what does that mean? Maybe more sitting in youth. You know, I think youth participation in sports has actually gone down in certain areas of the country. And so, but that doesn't mean that they're not motivated youth. It just means that they had a different experience, you know, cultivated within them throughout their adolescence. But yet some of them are still exceptionally motivated people. So with the right coaching, they're going to make it fantastic military recruits. So
I love that. No, and congratulations, man. I think that honestly, so many people are going to benefit from that. And you're talking about this current generation, but you know, the position I was in with the Army Performance Psychology Program, I think it was 2010-ish, we did the world's largest sports psychology intervention study, and it was at basic training. And it was incredible to really look at some of the skills that were maybe devoid in that population. And to be able to create interventions to help them with that, you know, a session and joining. And we saw the biggest change in 18 to 24 year olds when we did the same sort of thing throughout the Army, right? So that was pre-COVID. But now if you add in, and again, that was back when people were, everybody was getting a trophy, No Child Left Behind. A lot of the things that really sort of, and again, we're non-political, but a lot of things that really started setting us up for, in my opinion, a little bit of a struggle, because we started not having to critically think, not having to be adaptable and resilient. We knew that we couldn't fail in some ways. And not that that is all bad, some good came out of that. But at the same time, again, nature's the first classroom. So if you look at bear cubs, how do bear cubs play? They fight. They find out ways to survive and adapt. And it's a survival skill. And we are nature. We're part of that. So if we lose that ability to do it, we struggle, which is what we're seeing. And then you add the pandemic on top of it, Steve. And now you've got Generation P, which we've talked about on the show, and all of their additional struggles. So I think, you know, studies like yours are tremendously important. I think the work that you're doing and you're going to continue to do with this master's degree, I honestly believe you're going to change the world for a lot of people, man. And I'm so proud to know you. I'm so proud to call you a friend and a brother, and just to watch your journey from the beginning until now. And I'm not going to drop the, you know, the PhD hint just yet, wink, wink, but I know that
I'm taking a year off.
I know you're a lifelong learner like me though. And I swore I would never get one. And here I am. So I couldn't be more proud of you, pal, with what you're doing. And I just wanted to take a minute and celebrate it, because you deserve it. And you're, you know, one of the more humble people I know. So you're never going to talk about it yourself. So just wanted to take that chance. And, you know, I love what you said about joy and self-care. And honestly, I couldn't agree with that more. I think the reason we need self-care is because, you know, stress is the mobilization of energy. We're usually stressed because we're giving energy for different reasons, work, caregiving, whatever that is. And those aren't always fun. We don't get a lot of joy in that sense. So then we should really balance that out with activities for self-care that bring joy. And I was just doing a webinar recently about self-care, and I'm doing another one out of state next week for a bunch of physicians about self-care. And that's one of the central messages, is about finding joy in it. And one of my personal favorites, and I like that you said physical or, you know, cognitive or emotional. One of my favorites has always been, and I'm going to take you back to my intro about you, which was completely sincere, but a little fun. I love to read. I love the written word. I have such a lifelong love affair with the written word, and poetry has always been my jam. I was writing poems. I found poems that I wrote when I was 6 years old. I have written a couple of books of poetry that I've never explored, you know, publishing or getting out there. I did it mostly for me as a catharsis during different parts of my life with struggles.
That's cool.
Yeah, man. I love it. I love the written word. Anybody that, you know, looks at our Instagram page at Nature of Wellness, just throwing it out there. I do throw some haikus up there once in a while. I've used it in my professional work. Professional athletes, I'll summarize our session together with a haiku at the end while they're doing a few minutes of meditating, and then give it to them to take with them, to put in their locker or wherever, just so they have that little sticky reminder of what we talked about. And it's just fun, man. It's fun. And I love poetry so much. And honestly, it fits so well into what we talk about on the show, because as we've mentioned with other guests who are visual artists, like James Samsel and his paintings, and different musical guests, as being nature being the first muse, nature was the first thing written about. Aside from maybe love, nature is the most written about topic in the history of our species. And I would argue that, you know, love and nature go hand in hand in a lot of those writings. But, you know, nature, just being able to express your feelings about the natural world in verse is such a tremendous skill set. And I joke about being a poet. I would love to be, but I'm always in awe of people who can paint a picture, this beautiful tapestry with words that just transport us somewhere else, that make us want to do more and explore more and be more and just get outside and see what else is there. And that's why I'm super, super excited to talk to our guest today. And this is someone who, you know, I fell in love growing up with Shel Silverstein, and you mentioned Dr. Seuss. I was a big Dr. Seuss fan. And, you know, I would always get those books from, I have a certain aunt that would always get me a Shel Silverstein book or a Dr. Seuss book for Christmas or birthdays. And that led to me, as I grew, starting to discover other poets. And then I noticed that theme of nature running throughout. People like, you know, Robert Frost and Mary Oliver and Emily Dickinson and Emerson.
Walt Whitman
and Wordsworth and Tennyson, and I could go on and on. Sylvia Plath. I mean, all of these folks who are just big parts of our society and the foundation of who we are as a species. Guys like Henry David Thoreau, who just celebrated the natural world so much, it made everybody during that time period want to just escape and jump over the back fence and explore a little bit. William Bartram was another significant American pioneer who was a naturalist, who became a respected figure in, you know, literary and scientific communities back in the 1790s. I mean, there's history reaching back to ancient Rome and Greece of nature writings and nature poetry. Oh, it wasn't overtly talked about in that way, but it was the backdrop of other writings and other poems. But nature has always been celebrated. And I'm so excited to talk to our guest today. And if you're okay with it, I'd love to segue right in and jump into this conversation. Our guest today is Jennifer Gordon. Jennifer Gordon is a lover of words, nature, and the depths of the human heart. She's a Michigan-based poet who draws much of her inspiration from nature. Her writing speaks to the potential of the human spirit, the intricacies of our life experiences, the beauty of the natural world, and the balance we must find within the chaos of ourselves. I couldn't love that more, Steve. She has released 3 books of poetry in the past 3 years and plans to create more in the future. She's also a yoga instructor, fitness instructor, meditation guide, athlete, hiker, and fun-loving mother of 3. And so beautiful. Wow. And I couldn't be happier to have you here today, Jennifer. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate it. And you, Steve, it is an honor to be here. I absolutely love your podcast. And I have just been in awe of some of the other people you've had on this show. So it's truly an honor to be here with you guys. Thank you.
Well, that's humbling. Thank you for that. Wow. Well, you know, obviously, I connected with you on Instagram because I'm an obvious fan of your work. I love, you know, I just came across, I'm always looking for nature themed content. And as soon as I started seeing verses from your poems and different shorter poems popping up and just the aesthetics, visual aesthetics around it, and then the words and the picture it painted in my head, I was like, man, I got to reach out to this person. And I was just instantly connected to it. So just know that I am a legitimate fan. I love your work and what you're trying to do with it and the meanings behind it. And I couldn't be happier that you're sharing some time with us. So thanks for being here. And I would love to start off by saying, or just asking a little bit about your background. If you could talk a bit about how you got to where you're at and what you're currently doing.
Sure, sure. Well, in terms of poetry, I've actually only been writing for 4 years, really not very long, four or
five years.
That's
incredible.
Yeah, I loved poetry in high school. I loved humanities. I loved creative writing. I loved all that stuff. But, you know, you do those things in high school for class, and then you graduate, you move on with life. And I kind of forgot all about poetry because now I'm becoming an adult and doing all this other stuff. But back in 2019, I went through some really hard stuff in my personal life. I mean, everything just kind of fell apart, to be honest. And shortly after that, still in 2019, I was then in a motorcycle accident. And so then I'm physically trying to put myself back together while also emotionally putting myself back together. And then COVID hit and everybody's world fell apart. So it was a hard time, man. And I was in counseling, loved my counselor. She was amazing. And one of her best suggestions to me was to start writing, journaling, writing things down in all different forms. But as I naturally was writing, little poems would just start to form on my page. So I'd be journaling, but then also making little poems in the margins. And it started becoming less writing journals and more writing poems. And I kind of felt like I was getting back to my roots from when I was younger, tapping back into something that I used to love. And it just went from there. I just started writing more and more. A good friend of mine who I had shared some of my poems with suggested that I make an Instagram page. You know, why don't you put them on Instagram? Why don't you share some of your words? And that sounded like an absolutely horrible idea, to be honest.
Scary.
Why would I want to do that? Yeah, that sounds terrifying. Why then people could judge my words. Then people could dislike them, or people could nothing them whatsoever. You know, nobody could say anything about it. So yeah, it was scary, but I ended up making an Instagram page, and somehow over the next 3 or 4 years, I ended up just writing every day, publishing books. I think I have, I don't know, 10,000 something followers on Instagram. I have no idea how that happened. But life is just, I don't know. It's crazy. It's been a really, really exciting journey.
That's incredible. And you know what the most incredible part for me is? I discovered your work during COVID. You know, everybody had a lot more time to spend scrolling through social media. I'm amazed that you just started writing, you know, a couple of years back. That's insane to me, because you just, your voice, you have such an established and confident voice in your writing. And, you know, I thought you'd been writing for a decade or more. So that's kudos to you. That's unbelievable that you were able to find your voice like that so quickly and
all pent up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm probably just talking to myself in my head for decades, and all of a sudden it just, you know,
that's
but
amazing.
Thank you so much.
No, it's true. And, you know, I said before we hit record that any form of art, any, the visual art, Steve, you were talking about going to a blacksmith shop, looking for some stuff for your garden and how beautiful it was. Any type of art, especially the written word, is nothing more than a reflection of humanity and the beauty that we have inside us and the beauty that we crave. I mean, as much divisiveness and garbage that we're creating for ourselves as a species right now, we all crave beauty and humanity. That's why we buy paintings, and we love to draw and doodle and sketch and read poems and even watch movies. You know, we love those great movies that speak to our soul. We crave that sort of thing. So anybody that can really sit down and let that voice out in such a wonderful way, it's phenomenal. I would love to talk to you about your books. You know, can you start with the first one and just talk about the inspiration behind it and what it meant?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the first one was really a product of all of those sitting and journaling and writing. And I just picked all my favorites and threw them together in a book. I connected on Instagram to another writer who ended up starting her own publishing company. And she and I kind of collaborated. I was the first book she published. And so that was a really exciting adventure for both of us. And that first book was really just inspired by all sorts of things. I have four chapters in it. One of them is dedicated specifically to nature, because that really is the root of where a lot of my inspiration comes from. And then the second book, very similar in terms of inspiration. I don't know if I have a good explanation why, but in my second book, I removed all of the love poems. My first book has love poems in it. And my second one, I was going through this whole creative process of organizing, and I just couldn't, I don't know, I couldn't get a vibe on that section of it. And I ended up just eliminating the whole thing. So the second book is a little less lovey-dovey, I guess. And then the third one is probably my favorite, because I brought a whole bunch of other artists into it. So my third one is a completely different aesthetic. I ended up collaborating with a whole bunch of different visual artists. So from all over the state of Michigan, I tapped into photographers and oil painters, a body painter, sketch artists. So just all these different, incredibly creative, amazingly talented people somehow agreed to work with me on this. It took a little convincing for some of them, but we ended up putting this book together that pairs my words of poetry with their visual art. And it turned out really exactly like I hoped it would. So I was really excited about that one.
That's fantastic. And I just happen to have that one sitting here beside me on the desk, which I want to come back to that in a minute and discuss just how beautiful that project was. So the first book had a chapter about nature, and that was Poems to Read in the Rain. Is that correct? And then you took the love poems out of the second one, which was The Nature of Night, if I'm not mistaken. What made you decide to, in the third book, which is called Blue Colored Muse, what made you want to focus so much on nature in the third book? Because as soon as I picked it up, I was like, wow, this is a basically a declaration of love to the natural world from start to finish in all art forms that are included in the book.
Yeah. My husband actually had a big role in that. He is a photographer and he loves to photograph nature. So he's a landscape artist. He loves forests and trees and lakes and capturing the beauty of nature in photographs. And so a couple of people had suggested, well, you guys should do something together. You should pair his photography with your words. And I love that idea. But as I thought about it more and more, I was like, you know, I want to pull even more. I love the photography, but it just kind of opened this gateway to me thinking about all these other incredible visual ways of expressing nature and art. And I had followed some really incredible artists on Instagram. And so I just started reaching out to them. And so he's definitely featured in the book. I have several of his nature photographs in there, but then I ended up pulling other people in as well.
That's amazing. Steve, what do you think? I mean, you live in a Norman Rockwell painting yourself out in Crested Butte. What do you think about all this?
It's beauty, right? It is joy encapsulated in self-expression. I always admire artists. You know, it's very, very difficult for any human to put themselves out there to the world. And so
it's scary,
right? When humans choose to put themselves out there to the world through their art, through their creative expression in whatever medium, I'm a human who admires it. So I'm grateful for it. And to know that artists are out there and they're able to help us convey emotion, maybe in ways that those of us who aren't creating art, right? If we are able to observe, we're able to engage, we're able to read, consume, and then process with and through art, right? It helps our humanity. It helps us empathize with others. It helps us understand ourselves better in different ways, right? Before we hit record, right, we were talking about, you know, sometimes, you know, a huge compliment for an artist, right, is to hear that, hey, you helped me put my feelings into words. You helped me put my thoughts into words. And I've had these feelings and thoughts bubbling around inside of me for a while. And it wasn't until I read your book or it wasn't until I read your poem, then something I was able to express and I feel like there's the expression I needed. And so, you know, I hope you continue creating your art forever.
Thank you so much. Yeah, absolutely. That is my favorite compliment. That is so incredibly meaningful to me. So people tell me that they've been thinking or feeling these things for a long time and never been able to put it into words. And they read something that I wrote and it evoked this emotion in them. And I've had people come to me with tears in their eyes saying these things. And it's just such an incredibly humbling, meaningful experience to have that conversation, to relate to somebody on a really deep level just by creating something that I love doing. You know, it's been a really incredible way to relate to people.
So what's coming up for you? Do you have another book you're about to publish? Do you have another collection of prose and poetry that's coming out?
I do write still quite frequently. I do post poetry on Instagram and on Facebook quite often, but I am not doing any book right now because I'm working on another big project in my life. I'm actually working on opening a bookstore.
Oh, cool.
That's the dream.
It's a big dream and it's a big, big project. I bought a 130-year-old building and I'm renovating it and trying to a bookstore, which I'm real excited about, but it has taken a lot of my time and energy. So people do ask me that all the time. When's the fourth book coming? I'm like, I have no idea. I need a minute.
Congratulations on this new part of the adventure.
Yeah. Chip and Joanna Gaines, if you're listening, get on it. Start a show.
Renovating that 130-year-old building. Yeah.
I'm on a buffer. So Chip and Joanna, if you'd like to come out and just give me any free advice.
That's awesome. That's amazing. I just want to take a second, Steve, and just say what you were saying a minute ago about showing appreciation for art and the joy and everything. That's so important. And we've seen it in the military population over the years. So a lot of the treatments at Walter Reed and other places for PTSD, TBI, different physical wounds or injuries, we've seen a lot of art added in as therapy, and it's not just the visual arts. We've seen tremendous gain and progress and response to things like the Mask Project at the National Intrepid Center of Excellence at Walter Reed. It was all over Time Magazine. It was a cover story where folks with PTSD and TBI were taking a blank mask and painting the mask to look like how they saw themselves. And it was a way to express that. And then they, you know, posted it all over the walls in the NYCO building there, which was beautiful. And they had a great response. But we've also seen other projects. There was a group that came in and took the uniform that the service member was injured in and taught them how to turn it into paper, a process to turn that uniform into paper. A lot of times the cover was still the digital pattern print. Sometimes it had blood from the injury on it. But it wasn't just about making this journal. It was about showing them how to express themselves through writing and express what they were feeling. And, you know, I know that there was some, it was traditional journaling, but as you said, Jennifer, it's really hard to start writing your feelings without some of it coming out in the form of poetry. So I know that some of the folks shared it with me and there were poems. And I mean, the beautiful part about poetry, as much as we love to teach it, and I should have said this to start, you know, my first college degree is in creative writing with an emphasis in poetry. I love poetry. I'm not going to lie. And as much as we love to teach the structure of poetry, and I'm not taking away from that, poetry, just like nature, is really, really hard to define. And I think it's very subjective. It reflects what the person is feeling. So I think that these programs for folks who are going through a traumatic experience are terribly important. And Jennifer, I think I heard you say that earlier. You felt like things were falling apart in your life, and then you faced this physical trauma with the accident. And, you know, your words came out as a way for you to express how you were feeling inside. And you found a beautiful way to arrange them. And that's exactly what I'm talking about with service members and others. So I'm a big, huge, huge proponent, massive proponent of having these programs in place for anybody. I know we're in Mental Health Month right now. So if there aren't programs to help people deal with their mental and emotional dimensions of well-being that are focused around writing, poetry, expressing themselves creatively through words, we're doing a huge disservice because we are the only species on the planet that communicates that way. So why wouldn't we use that skill that we've developed over millennia to be able to talk about those feelings and in a healthy way? So I love what you said. And you said you love to hear people talk about how your work has touched them. And I read your books as they came out. I love them. Blue Colored Muse, the latest one, by far my favorite. And as soon as I picked it up, the first poem I flipped to, and if you don't mind, I'm going to share it real quick. It's short. It absolutely grabbed me. And I was like, holy cow, this is it. The world has wanted me to be so many things, but all I have ever wanted to be is free. That's such a testament to the human spirit. And as soon as I heard it, I was like, I'm in. And I went back and I read everything two or three times that day. I really focused in on the visual art that was accompanying each poem. And it was just beautiful. This book should be everywhere because it's so beautiful. I know you're a very humble person. I get it. But, you know, I'm throwing it out there. If you're listening right now, we're going to put the links in. Please check this book out. Check all of her works out. But if you're a lover of nature, which I'm guessing if you're listening to this, you have to be, check out this book. Check it out. And the bookstore idea, I got to tell you, that is the dream. I was in a little bookstore in Vermont in a small town a few years back. And I walked in and the guy was sitting there reading a book. Nobody else was in there. And I said, wow, this is the dream. And he goes, my life is a Hallmark movie at Christmas every day.
Yeah. Like you walk into a Hallmark bookstore and don't you just want to stay there all day?
Unreal. And they invite you to do that.
Yeah.
As a writer, I can't imagine a greater thing than owning a bookstore and inviting other people in and, you know, not just sharing your work, but just sharing the written word.
Everybody's. I think a huge component to mental health is purpose. Finding some purpose. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a huge, like, oh, this is my life purpose. I mean, you can have little bits of purpose that are different every day and creating something, creating a poem or creating art or creating, you know, anything tangible from the chaos that is going on inside you. If you can put that into paper or into words or into a picture, you feel like you have purpose when you make it, you know? So being a writer, creating a poem or creating a book or being an artist that creates a mural or a painting, it's so good for your mental health to create something, you know? And I love the aspect of creating that it's not only good for the mental health of the creator, but it touches other people. It brings people in with beauty or relatability, or, you know, it connects people. And that's something I love about all forms of art.
Yeah. And back to Steve's point earlier, it helps you find joy, right? Which is another component of mental and emotional well-being. And you mentioned purpose, and that's a direct connection between mental and emotional health and your spiritual well-being. So we're success-driven organisms as humans. We want to wake up today better than we were yesterday. We need something to look forward to. If you watch the Blue Zones show on Netflix, or you look at the research, every single society around the world that has the biggest population of Centaurians, oldest living humans on the planet, they all value purpose. They all value finding joy in their everyday life. And a lot of times when we face some sort of a trauma, we don't have the social support we need because we can't verbalize or vocalize what it is we're feeling. So we don't want to ask for help. We don't know how to ask for help. We don't know who to ask for help because we don't know how to talk about it. So even being able to do it in the form of a poem or a haiku or a song or whatever else, you're putting it out there and you're saying, hey, this is how I'm feeling. And then it allows those that can help you to gravitate towards you, or it allows you to be able to at least talk about it. Now, back to members of the military for a second. One of my favorite things I was ever a part of was early days in the Army program out at the time, Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio at the Intrepid Center, the amputation and burn center for the Army. And we saw a lot of folks who were really struggling to talk about their amputation and their prosthetic and the situation they were in. So they started bringing in kids, young kids. And young kids are curious and they're without bias and they're not malicious, right? So they would come in and these kids would just start asking honest kid-like questions, just honest, you know, curiosity. What happened to your leg? And these men and women would have to find ways to talk to this kid and explain it. And they would say, oh, this is my magic leg. And the kid would say, oh, can you jump over a house with it? And they were like, I don't know. We should go try. You know, so it would allow them to talk about it in a way that was without judgment, without, you know, the fear of any sort of persecution or feeling weird or odd or different. And it gave them that confidence at the end of the day to be able to go forward and talk to other folks about it and make it normalized. And I think that that's another opportunity we have with the written word, with poetry. I can't think of anybody who hasn't read something at some point in their life, whether it's a poem or an article or an essay, something, and didn't completely connect to it on a spiritual level instantly. That's why quotes are so important and popular in our culture, because we read a quote, it's one line, and it immediately grabs you and you're like, yes, that's exactly how I'm feeling. So yeah, it's connection. I could go through every dimension of well-being and I could point out how the written word impacts every single one through motivation, through processing, through purpose, through all of these different intellectual. If you're someone who's writing poetry, you're probably going to go research elements of that poetry, whether it's a concept or a word or a place. So that's fostering and nurturing your intellectual well-being. It's not going to finish your master's, Steve. That's awesome. And that's definitely a part of your intellectual well-being. I have 5 degrees. I get it. But I always tell people intellectual wellness has nothing to do with school. It has to do with learning something today about something you care about that you didn't know yesterday. If you like motorcycles, read a motorcycle magazine. If you want to write, just write. Expand your brain. Create that intellectual curiosity. Learn to critically think, problem solve, all of those things. That's a big piece of what's missing in our society right now. Population you're talking about, Steve. You know, you're a mother of three. I'm sure you've seen it in your kids. I talk to parents every day who worry about their kids being able to problem solve and critically think, because we live in a different society where they're handed everything in a short amount of time. It's the TikTok brain. It's, you know, the Twitter society where we only get snippets and our attention span is adapting and adjusting to that. So this is a great way. Poetry is a great way to meet people where they're at and coax them back into a little bit of deeper thinking. Because poems, I mean, for the most part, there are some really long ones out there. I think of Homer when I say that, his writings, you know, novel-sized poetry. But for the most part, poems are really short and succinct. And they, you know, they paint this beautiful picture in the fewest amount of words as possible. That's why I love haikus. I hadn't written a haiku in 20 years, probably until 2019. I was traveling with the baseball team I was working with, and we were in San Francisco, and I went to City Lights bookstore, a historic bookstore there. And I was looking around and I found the Beatnik Poet Room, and I got all excited. And I found the chair that Jack Kerouac sat in when he wrote. And I was like, oh man, I got to sit in that chair. And right beside it, there was a book of haikus that Kerouac wrote. I didn't even know he wrote haikus. So I bought it, went back, and that's the day I started writing haikus with athletes. And it went over like gangbusters. I've written probably, I think, 4,200 since 2019. That's a hot take, folks. I don't talk about it often, but I write, I don't even know, 5 or more haikus a day. Little observations I make. It's just helped. It's helped my mental health so much, especially during COVID. It gave me a way to process what was happening around me. I didn't have to share it with anybody, but when I put it on paper, it was staring back at me, and I had to take a real hard look at that, and I had to figure out what that meant, you know? So it's really exciting. Golly, this is exciting. I definitely want to come back to talking about poetry in the bookstore, but there's a whole lot of other dimensions to who you are that are relevant to our listeners. I mean, in the bio, I mentioned hiking and running and being a yoga teacher and a meditation teacher and a fitness instructor. And I mean, you are so entrenched in wellness. You're ensconced, as George Costanza would say, ensconced in wellness. What brought about this commitment to wellness, not just mentally, but just in all around? Like, what's that motivation?
I think the realization that it's all so connected is a big deal. So your physical, your emotional, your mental health is all so connected. And I really don't think that you can thrive in one without dabbling in all of them. I think that if your body feels tired and sluggish and, you know, you don't mentally feel well if you don't physically feel well, and physical health isn't going to thrive if you aren't in a good mental space either. So just knowing that each part of you is so very connected to all the other parts of you, and that each of those parts is so important. I think it really just all comes down to self-care. And people think that self-care is like, oh, you take bubble baths at night and drink wine. And like, that is self-care. And like,
does it bring you joy?
Yeah. Real true self-care is investing in yourself.
Oh, I love
in
that.
All different aspects of yourself. It's taking care of yourself. It's liking yourself. It's treating yourself the same way you would treat your best friend or your kids. You know, you'd encourage people you love to do all these things to take care of themselves. And you have to do that to yourself too.
Like so many other things in our life, it's sort of in the name, like self-care. You really have to deliberately care for yourself.
You have to care.
Right. When you care for anything, there's an aspect of love and respect and intention and awareness and acceptance and all of the things. So when you truly self-care, you're saying, I'm giving myself all of those things, the love I deserve, the attention I deserve, all of those things. And Steve, I'm going to go back to what you said, man, joy. And I know I joked about the bubble bath and wine, but if that brings you joy, then heck yes, that is self-care. And you should practice that as often as you can.
Yes. And I do the bubble bath and wine also. That is very important.
Okay.
Wasn't knocking the bubble bath at all.
And that's another thing, is we are so multidimensional. It would be so unfair for us to think that we have to do one thing for self-care. And I know,
right,
like so many other things in wellness and now in the nature space, I'm seeing every single day, when a new program or product or book or whatever pops up, that's the one thing that gets pushed. And there is no cookbook for any of this. Folks, you heard me say it here. I'll debate anybody that disagrees with me all day long. There's no cookbook for any of this. And the fact that we push one single focus usually reflects our comfort level as a person who's pushing it, our skill set, our abilities, our monetary interests. But there is no one size fits all for any of this. We're so multidimensional. We have to find multiple ways. I love to fly fish. If you're around me for 2 seconds, you're going to hear that. That's not the only thing I do for self-care. It can't be, because those days I can't get out on the river, I would just crumble and fall apart. You have to have a plan. I love that you're saying that so much. So how did you get into being a yoga teacher or a fitness instructor? Like why did you pick those particular things? And I've said on the show before, I teach an integrative therapies class at a university. And I cover a lot of those different topics. And I'm always curious about the motivation that sends you in certain avenues or certain directions.
Really, they just kind of happened organically. I went to a yoga class with a friend and I loved it. And I went to more and more classes. I ended up eventually registering to go to training and becoming an instructor just because I loved it so much. I loved how it affected people. I loved the community. I loved the way it was so incredibly welcoming and non-judgmental and focused on overall wellness. It's an incredibly non-competitive form of physical exercise, if you want to call it exercise. A lot of yogis would disagree with me. This is not exercise. It's, you know, something bigger, which yes, it is. But if you're looking to take care of your body, yoga is an incredibly non-competitive, lovely community to be a part of. And I love that part of it. I started instructing yoga at a gym. So not at a yoga facility, at an actual gym that had lots of other fitness classes as well. I became best friends, still am, with the main fitness instructor there. I fell in love with all those classes too. And really, I got into fitness because it was fun. I just loved the community there and the people. And dancing is so fun. And lifting and feeling strong with your friends is fun. And really, I got into it because it was fun. That's like the big complicated answer. I just love doing it. My best friend during COVID had a quote that I thought was really hilarious. All of our classes essentially disbanded because you couldn't be together inside. So we were all kind of on hiatus for a while. And you're supposed to go home and work out by yourself because, you know, you can't work out with anybody else. And she called me one day. She's like, "Jen, I've had a revelation." I said, "Oh no, what's going on?" She said, "I don't like exercise." "What do you mean you don't like exercise? You're a fitness instructor." She goes, "No, I just like having fun with my friends. I don't like being at home doing that." Yeah, that makes sense, because it's a mental thing to be with your friends and be part of that community and laugh and dance together and, like, you know, make it a whole thing. And if you're just sitting at home, not finding joy, right? Like we talked about that before, it has to be joy. And she wasn't finding joy being by herself. And some people do. Some people do find so much joy in their own home personal gym. And so it's just really all about finding something that you love doing. You know, not everybody loves yoga. Not everybody loves group classes. Not everybody loves lifting in a gym. But then go walk outside or go run and play with your kids. You know, find something, anything physical that you enjoy doing. I think that people often get pushed into one thing, like somebody drags them to a class or says, "Oh, you gotta go do this to get healthy," and they don't like it. And then they say, "Oh, well, never mind. I don't like physical exercise." But you do. You just haven't found the one you like. You know, like, everyone is so different. So just exploring all the different options of doing things is important.
I love the quote from your friend.
Did I even answer your question?
You nailed it. No, that was fantastic and much more than I expected in a good way. I mean, you touched on so many different things. I think Dr. Murthy, the Surgeon General, would have loved your answer because you really talked about social connection. And, you know, we're in such a struggle right now with connecting with one another. And I think that's leading to some of our issues with humanity right now and divisiveness. We've forgotten how to be together. And it started before the pandemic. It started with the surge in technology, and we don't have to go to somebody's house to talk to them. We could text them. We don't even have to hear their voice. We could send thumbs up emoji, which is one of my biggest pet peeves in the world. You know, I won't hide that fact. I mean, when I send somebody a novella and they shoot back a thumbs up, I think it's the laziest form of communication. It drives me nuts. And it devalues the thought I put into the message. But I know as soon as this airs, I'm going to have a million thumbs up in my inbox. I get it. Chuckle, chuckle. It always happens. But it's true. And we've lost the ability to communicate with each other and connect. And I say it all the time. Communicating is the sharing of ideas. Connecting is the sharing of humanity. That is the only reason we've made it this far as a species. The fact that we're trying to separate and divide and go forward is ludicrous to me. I don't get it. And, you know, we've touched on a lot of different things so far. I think that if you're listening and you're turning on the TV and you're following the 24-hour news cycle of all of the horrific things that are being pushed on us every day, turn it off. You know, pick up a book, read a poem, look at the beauty in the world, go outside, open a window, sit under a tree. You have the free choice to turn that station off. Turn the alerts on your phone that shoot headlines all day long of all of the nonsense. I'm going to use this word very loosely, that we as adults are putting out into the world right now for the younger generations to follow. I can't even imagine being a kid right now and thinking that this is what it means to be an adult. You know, if you have kids, read your kids Dr. Seuss and Shel Silverstein and, you know, have fun with words and let them be silly. I was at an event and somebody had their five-year-old and I was trying to talk to them in rhyme, funny rhyme. And they looked at me like I was an alien. And I said, well, don't you like poems? And they didn't get it. And I was like, well, how do you rhyme words? And they just didn't get it. And my heart broke a little bit. Because 5 years old, 6 years old, that's when they should be speaking in rhyme, you know? And I think that it's such a dying art.
You introduced that to them and now they're going to think about it.
I hope so. I really do. I do. I think it's time for us and folks like us with the similar mindset, the folks listening on the show, it's time for us in our species to circle the wagons a bit and to say, you know what? This is what's gotten us here. This is all the great parts of being us. And we're the only species that can do so many of these things. So why don't we just get better at doing those beautiful things? You know, and I love celebrating folks like you, Jennifer, so much because you're so multidimensional and everything you're doing is pushing positivity out into the world, whether it's yoga or fitness instructing or connecting with people in person or through your words or a bookstore in a town in Michigan that's going to be amazing. And I hope I get to go there someday. And it's just so cool. Thank you for everything you're doing. And it's just beautiful.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you so much. And yes, you are both invited to the bookstore.
There it is, Steve.
Anytime you can come.
It's good fishing in Michigan, so we'll have to take you up on that.
We are the Great Lakes State. We have tons of places for you to fish. You should probably just plan a whole trip.
That's amazing. I can't wait. And, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you about, and I think I get a better understanding of it from when I first formed this question in my head after we talked the other day. Your poetry has a little bit of darkness to it. And I don't want to say that in a bad way, because darkness is part of life. And yeah, not darkness in a negative connotation by any means, but maybe a spookiness, like a little, I don't even know the word for it. But on social media, whether it's in the aesthetic sometime or some of the theme and the tone, what is your motivation there? Like, I know that you started writing out of a place of hurt and trauma, but where does that lens come from?
So my genetics, my history, my childhood, there's a lot of mental health issues in my family. And I have dealt with mental health issues my whole life. And some really pivotal moments for me have been embracing that versus fighting it. I'm not going to go into a whole big long thing, but a lot of my childhood, I believed I was a bad person because I had I have suffered from intrusive thoughts. And so I had all these things I didn't know how to express. I didn't know how to handle. When you're a little kid, those things feel traumatizing and scary and very dark. And as an adult, being able to study them, to recognize them, and to embrace the fact that we all have dark parts of us. And I don't mean dark as in evil or bad or anything.
It almost doesn't seem like the right word.
Yeah, no, we're such multidimensional creatures, and embracing all of that versus trying to just be all one side of something has been very empowering for me as a person to study and accept and absorb all the different parts of me versus trying to stuff it away or label it as bad. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
No, but it absolutely does. And Steve, I'd love your input on maybe a better word than dark or darkness, because it's not, it's just, you know, it's who we are. It's part of who we are. We all have light parts. We all have parts that are, you know, we're afraid to share with other people. We're afraid that we're different or weird or whatever, you know, but, you know, embracing, I love that. What do you think, Steve?
Without the darkness, there is no light. Yeah, those words really aren't even mine. I know others, many others have said those in different contexts in the past and throughout humanity, but without the darkness, there is no light. And so, you know, it, to me, it feels like after significant events in my late 20s, dealing with war and the fallout of war, there were some dark periods and there was some self exploration that had to occur, right? Introspection, right, had to occur in order for me to choose better, a better path for myself, different, to choose differently, and to choose light, lightheartedness, to choose to assume positive intent when I interact with people, even if something initially might seem, is that something against me? Is there somebody coming at me? Somebody disagreeing with me in a very, you know, strong way, right? Learning how to assume positive intent from those around me has really been very, very helpful to see the light, to see others' bright light, and to encourage them to shine as well, right? Because it sure does feel a heck of a lot better when, you know, maybe if we're having kind of a challenging day and someone responds to us in a very encouraging way, it usually, right, helps us feel a little bit better and might help pull us out of whatever little funk we might be in on that day or in that moment. And sometimes that's all we need, right? We need just like that moment of, that feels good. That helps. That feels supportive. It feels welcoming. It feels empathetic, right? And then that might change the tone of the rest of our day from just one brief, maybe interaction with someone else, or from one brief poem that we read, from one piece of writing that we read. It's so easy to get caught up these days in negativity. Obviously, we see that out on the internet every single day. If you look at the internet every day, you see a lot of negativity out there. And so to bring positivity, to bring joy in a genuine way, right? Not selling it, right? I'm not selling you positivity. I'm not selling you joy. I'm just simply another human right here in this moment with you, encouraging you, reminding you, hey, there is joy in this, or hey, there is light at the end of that dark tunnel. It just might take us a bit to get to it.
And I think that authenticity you're speaking about is saying, I have that feeling inside me too, and it's okay. And not to shy away from it. And, you know, as humans, one of the things, and this show is about nature and wellness, but the undertone is humanity. And as part of the human species, we all share successes, joys, happiness, sadness, all of the range of emotions. We all have them. We've been socialized to think some are more acceptable than others. Put on a brave face, put on a happy face. Why don't you smile more? We hear it all the time. Sometimes it hurts, and that's okay. That's a normal part of the journey. And I swear to everybody listening, this was not intended to air during Mental Health Month. It's just so beautifully serendipitous that this is happening, because this is a great conversation, and that's what makes us human. But that's part of the beauty of being human, is that we all feel those things collectively. It's just part of who we are, and we shouldn't shy away from it. And we should reinforce to others that it's okay to hurt. It's okay. You know, I tell my clients every day, feel what you've got to feel when you've got to feel it. Just don't get stuck there. And if you don't know how to get out of it, that's when you need to reach out to somebody else, because that person has experienced it too. And for anybody out there who's a guru, and I'm doing air quotes, we have so much guruism in the world right now. And all of these folks are just blasting you with this fake facade of, my life is perfect, my life is always happy, you know, follow my guidance because everything's great on my end. That is simply not true. And if you're buying that from them, I'm sorry, it's okay. It's okay. You're looking for something, but that is an untrue goal that you're chasing. Nobody is happy all the time, and that's okay. And if you don't know how to deal with it, that's okay too. We all get lost, but find someone to reach out to. Find someone that can help you, because again, they've gone through it too. I tell this to my clients, especially the young ones, all the time. I know you're hurting. Guess what? I hurt too every day. And that's okay.
And this is such an important conversation to have. Because when you're in the midst of depression or anxiety or going through a dark part of your journey, it's really, really hard not to feel alone. And so without conversations, without people being honest and talking about it, you feel like, oh, I'm the only one that feels this way. There must be something wrong with me. And when you're already depressed, now you're thinking there's something wrong with you too. And it just cycles into something worse and worse. And so having those conversations, being honest with each other about the fact that we all go through this stuff helps immensely, I think.
Absolutely. And Steve, back to your point of social media, that's the danger of social media. The biggest danger I see is that you're comparing what you're feeling and experiencing to a photo somebody else has posted, which is either the best 2 seconds of their entire year or something that somebody has paid for them to put up there, or the, you know, all the filters. I told a group of young people recently when I talked to them, I said, how many of you follow 10 or more influencers on social media? And almost every hand went up. And I said, okay, you do realize that, again, it's in the name. They are influencing you. And it looked like I threw cold water on the whole crowd. They were so just taken back by that. And I said, and do you realize that somebody's paying them a lot of money to influence you? And it's like they had never considered that. So you have to be careful who you let into your mental and emotional state. You can't compare. When we start comparing, we start losing, because every single person shares all of those things I mentioned, but everybody processes those differently. Our journeys are so different. So again, back to what you do, Jennifer, I think it's so great that you're doing this in a way that shows people how to express what they're feeling inside. I love that people are reaching out to you and thanking you for that. Because again, you're human. You've put yourself out there. You're vulnerable. That's a big step, as Steve mentioned. Putting yourself out there is huge. So hearing that feedback, genuine, honest feedback for the right reasons. Like, that's why you started doing this. After the initial, I need to vocalize what I'm feeling. Then I bet there was some point along the way where you said, I want to share this with others to help them in the same way.
Yes, absolutely. And there are some other really incredible writers out there who have done exactly the same for me.
Who are some of those people?
Oh, gosh. I've got a few really, really favorites. L.E. Bowman. You know, I'll message to you and maybe you can put it in.
I'll put them in the show notes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. My favorite people to follow. There's a handful that write almost every day. And I look forward every morning to see what they have posted, because they are just so brilliant and relatable. And just every time I read what they wrote, sometimes I get jealous, you know, also because we're human. So they'll write something like, why didn't I think of it? Why didn't I write that? But it's such an inspiration to follow these brilliant people. So yeah, I would love to send you a couple of their names that you could put in the comments.
I would love to do that. And if not listing names, because I know I'm inferring, but I'm assuming also that you don't want to leave somebody out, which I get. It's sort of like the Oscar speech. You know, I know I'm going
to
leave somebody out.
Like a minute to think about this and give you the ones that I love the most. Because yeah,
no, I totally get it. But if not naming them specifically, like, what is the biggest impact collectively that those folks have had on you? Because you're somebody who is inspiring other people with your words and your work, but you're also human. So you seek inspiration and motivation from folks. We're all sharing this experience as we're talking about. What have those folks, like, when you're looking for those poets, those authors, those sources of inspiration, what are you getting from them?
Profound thoughts. Those are what I look for the most. Things that I read and think, oh my gosh, like I could be thinking about that the rest of the day.
Wow.
Things that just hit you. And it doesn't have to be in one specific category or theme or anything, just any profound thought that you're like, wow, I really want to delve into that within myself, what it brings out in me, but also what they were thinking, what they wrote it. You know, things that just hit you hard. Because when you're thinking profound things, that's a deep part of being human too. That feels like a very productive part of your day to be digging deeper into something interesting.
So, and this is going to be a softball question. I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but what is it about nature that inspires you?
Oh, gosh, so many things. my first thing that comes to my mind when you say that is as we said, dealing with mental health, I've suffered with depression and anxiety, and nature is incredibly calming to me. I will never forget, I have a good friend who also suffers from anxiety. And I was talking to her one day, I was just having a rough day. And part of anxiety is overthinking all these things that haven't actually happened. You know, you're thinking about what could go wrong. You're looking back at a conversation you had and thinking, oh my gosh, I should have said something different. Anxiety is a whole bunch of things that aren't real, that are playing over and over again in your head. And I was telling her, I was having a really anxious day. She said, Jen, go sit outside, because you need to go sit with things that are real. Yeah, like you go sit with the trees. The trees are here. They're real. They're next to you. They're living, they're breathing, they're right here with you. They're not these crazy thoughts that are going on in your head that aren't real. You know, so just sitting with things that are natural and beautiful and real is a big deal to me.
You punched me in the chest with that one. That was, wow. Sit with the trees because they're real. That's incredible.
And I've talked to people in yoga about that as well, with your breath. We refer to the breath as an anchor to your present moment, because your thoughts are going here, you're going there, they're going all over, but your breath is happening right here, right now. So when you're trying to calm your mind, focusing on your own breathing is a big deal.
I teach a lot of mindfulness classes outside in nature. And I know we've discussed it on the show with Mark Coleman and one of our personal heroes, Steve, Sharon Salzberg. Nature is the perfect backdrop for being present.
Yes.
Yeah. Nature is here now. And I say it all the time. We get so caught up in the idea of perfection in our day-to-day life through comparison or expectation or social norms, in air quotes. But I have people imagine the most perfect, beautiful nature scene they can think of. And then I say, okay, now if you were to zoom in on that, is it perfect? Are the trees perfect? Aren't they scarred and missing branches? And oh yeah, yeah. So it doesn't have to be, nature is never perfect, but it's beautiful. And if we look at it that way, why can't we look at ourselves that way too? And I think it's just a lesson that we inherently know, we just forget about, you know? So I love that. One other thing I want to ask you about is how to get started. And again, I'm blown away that you're still in the getting started phase, even though you've released 3 books and I think you're an amazing poet. If somebody out there is listening and says, you know, I've always wanted to write, I've always wanted to write poems, they've got the Mark Campbell syndrome of I'm going to do it someday, how could you encourage them to get started?
The biggest part to getting started is just write. You just write and you write and you write, and you don't write for anybody else, and you don't write because you want to get published, and you don't write because you have this big exterior goal. You write because it's good for you. And I think that in that healing process, things will naturally develop. Like if you wanted to write a book, like as you write and write and write, you'll naturally have more poems that kind of cohesively come together in a theme that would flow. And at some point, you feel ready to put things together into a categorized plan that you would want to present to somebody. And when you feel like you have this creative process of something you'd like to present to somebody, even if it's really raw, then you start to reach out to publishers. I'm a little biased because I started writing on Instagram, but the poetry community on Instagram is amazing. It really is. People have shows where they read poetry live. People have groups where they encourage each other. That whole community on there is very supportive. So I would recommend, if you really want to get into poetry, to start with that community. Facebook is a whole different thing. It's not really the same. For whatever reason, the Instagram platform has created a beautiful community for poets. So I highly recommend that. But also just reaching out to publishers. You submit your stuff 800 times, and that's okay. And, you know, if people... If you get rejected, that's normal. Even if you have the absolute most brilliant book, you're brand new and they might not pay any attention to it. And so you just keep submitting it and you don't give up and you believe in yourself. Because if you don't believe in yourself, nobody's going to believe in you. It starts with you, right? So yeah, just just loving your writing, whether anybody else loves it or not, and going from there.
That's amazing. And, you know, what great advice for anything in life that we want to go after.
Yeah. Love what you do, even if nobody else loves it. That's okay.
There we go. Back to finding joy, Steve. You really set the tone for this one early on. You know, one thing you said about reaching out to publishers and just continuing to do it. We've mentioned this guy a few times on the show today already, but Theodore Geisel, the great Dr. Seuss, his first writing or book in 1937 was rejected 27 times before a publisher picked it up. And that's seriously one of the most well-read and distributed authors in the history of our planet. And he was passed on 27 times. So thank goodness he went for number 28, right? Because I know it shaped my childhood. I know so many people who grew up reading Dr. Seuss, and there was a surge in his movies based on his books a few years ago, which introduced a whole new generation. So just keep trying. Something else I wanted to share is, you know, just like I reached out to you on Instagram, I know you said you reached out to other artists and authors on Instagram. I think that's a lost art. You know, I did that growing up. I've shared before that Zig Ziglar was a mentor of mine growing up, and I just reached out to him cold multiple times, and he finally reached back out to me. And I've done that with so many other people, and I've had folks in my life say, I admire you for just saying, hey, I want to meet that person. I'm going to find a way to meet that person. I want to encourage everybody listening, if you want to go after something like that, find someone who's already doing it and reach out to them. They might answer, they might not, but reach out to another person. Ask them how they got there. If you want to be mentored, ask to be mentored. We're in a day and time and age where it's so much easier than it was when I was growing up, when Steve was growing up, when Jennifer was growing up. Not that any of us are old. I'm not going to admit to that. But I mean, we didn't have social media. We didn't have email like it is today.
Thank goodness for me.
Thank goodness. Yeah, I would have been a menace. But honestly, it's so easy to reach out to people now and just say, hey, I want to do what you do. Don't be afraid to take that step. I think everything you just said about starting out as a poet and a writer, I think that's all very tangible, very easy to digest. Just great advice. Thank you for that. And you mentioned reading live. You know, I bet you thought I might have forgotten about this part, but I was wondering if you would share one of your poems with us and our listeners.
Sure, I can do that. I've got my book here. I will open it. Do you want me to read one? Do you want me to read two? What do you want me to do?
Oh, it's up to you. Just whatever your heart sings to you right now. Which book are you reading from?
I grab Blue Cluttered Muse.
Okay.
It has a lot of nature stuff in it. So as I talked about, these poems are all paired with a visual art. So I do love when people can see both together, but some of them are standalone just fine. Most of them are short. So I'll read a couple. So this is actually my favorite one. And it ties into nature a lot. And I've had a lot of people tell me that they connected with this piece. Some days the weight of the world is so heavy that I break it apart in pieces, haul it bit by bit out into the forest, hang it there upon the branches, and ask the limbs of the earth to bear the burdens I can no longer carry. I think that nature is a place where you can unpack things, even if it's just temporarily, to sit and just be.
Wow. And it goes back to episode one. My favorite thing about nature is that it's the great equalizer. It doesn't care. It doesn't judge. It's there for us for whatever we need. So I remember that poem. It resonated with me as soon as I read it for that reason. That was it. I love it.
Makes me happy.
Wow. Thank you so much.
This is a similar kind of tone to it. I have heard it said that we should reach for the stars, but I find that I am most at home with my feet exploring the paths of the earth. And so for now, I think I shall seek my peace there first.
Wow. I love that. Steve, I know you're a big Thich Nhat Hanh fan. That's right out of his playbook. And the way he talked about walking mindfully on the earth, he said, my feet kiss the earth with every step. And that's what I just heard in that poem. It's beautiful.
The first one actually made me think of another sort of quote that has always like resonated with me ever since I heard it. Actually, I think I saw it on a sign one time in a place like a metro, like the London, like tube station. And it said, everyone comes with baggage. find somebody in your life who's willing to help you unpack. You know, we all have stuff. Every single human, whether their lives look perfect out there on social media or the internet or something like that, every single human has some baggage. So we're just so much better served if we're willing to put ourselves out there in some way, shape, or form and ask for help. You know, ask for help whenever we feel we need it. And a lot of times the community, those around us will resonate, you know, our thoughts and feelings will resonate with them. And I like to believe at least people are genuinely, we desire to be helpers, you know, of each other. We desire to share our expertise, you know, with each other. And as long as we stay willing to share, we will receive joy, goodness in return.
Thank you so much for reading those. I mean, hopefully everybody listening gets it now, why I was so excited to have you on and listen to your words. Just fantastic. Wow. Okay. So I would love to, if you're okay with it, switch to the part of the interview we call the Fast Five.
Oh boy. Okay.
I know you're a listener, so I know you know what's coming. So five quick questions, answer as quickly as you can.
Oh gosh. Number one. This is not, it's okay.
Oh, it's going to be great. Where is your favorite spot to get outside?
Okay. So can I give a general?
Yeah.
Instead of like an exact specific place?
Absolutely.
Okay. So beaches are my favorite, but not the kind of beaches most people like. I don't like hot sand. I don't like other people. I want to be on the rocks with the water lapping up at me. That's my favorite spot. The water in front of me, sitting on the rocks, the woods behind me. That is my most peaceful space.
Okay. Which is reflective of where you live in the country, which is great.
Yes, true. We do have a lot of spots around the Great Lakes. Yeah.
It's fantastic. I love that. What is your preferred outdoor activity?
Hiking. 100% hiking. I love the state of Michigan, and I do have some really beautiful hiking spots within a few hours drive of me. I don't have any amazing hiking spots like where I live. So a runner and a dog walker and, you know, all these other things. But if I lived somewhere where there was good hiking around me, I would be an avid hiker instead all day, every day. That is my favorite. I traveled to Glacier National Park and Zion National Park in 2023. And just, Zion was beautiful, but it's not my favorite kind of nature. Glacier National Park, on the other hand, I could have just moved in and never come home. Just, oh my gosh.
I agree.
Incredible.
So beautiful.
Just in love with it. In love with it. And I was within 20 feet of a bear, and it was the most amazing moment of my whole life.
Did you write about it when you got back?
I did not. I didn't write about him. I don't know why, but I just loved that guy, man. Loved him.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, hiking.
What's your favorite food to eat outside?
Oh, to eat outside?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ice cream, obviously.
Any particular flavor?
I can't take it on a hike. So I guess those two answers kind of conflict because I can't take ice cream.
I just sit outside.
Just sit outside in the yard.
Sitting on my front porch counts, right?
Yeah.
Ice cream is my favorite food to eat everywhere, especially out there.
I love it so much. Do you have a favorite animal?
Wolf.
A wolf. Yes.
They are my spirit animal. They are all over my house. My whole library is full of pictures of wolves.
That's fantastic. If you could only go to one outdoor spot for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Is this a specific spot? Like this one little town, this is the one spot I would want to go forever. One spot. All right. Well, I'm going back to Glacier then for sure. Glacier National Park. I will put up my tent and I will be happy there forever.
That's wonderful.
Yep.
One bonus question. Do you have a favorite nature quote, saying, or idiom?
I do. I have a lot of favorite nature quotes. Honestly, I have a bunch of them saved on my phone. I have ones that I read on a regular basis, but I definitely have a couple hard and fast favorites. Robert Frost is one of my absolute favorite poets. And this is a quote from, it's a segment of a poem. It's the end of his poem, but this has become a quote that a lot of people use on its own. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep And I feel like that quote can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. To me, it means some pretty intimate, powerful things. And then one of my other favorites is John Muir. He has a lot of great nature quotes, a lot. So it's hard to pick from, but this is one of my favorites by him too. There is a love of wild nature in everybody, an ancient mother love ever showing itself, whether recognized or no, and however covered by cares and duties. And I feel like that is such a summary of our society. We are so covered by cares and duties. And so many of us don't even know that we love nature because we're never out. So I love that observation by him.
That's awesome. 94% of the time we're not out there. Just throwing that out there. No, the Robert Frost poem, that section of the poem is actually, if you could see my background on my computer, it's actually the background of my computer. So it's one of my all-time favorite. I love it so much. And it represents something very specific to me, just like, you know, it does to you. So that's wonderful. Gosh, those are both so good. Do you have any parting words for the audience about nature and how it impacts health and well-being?
I guess my most important advice when it comes to nature is just to get out in it. I think it can mean different things to different people, and it doesn't have to be anything specific. You don't have to go hiking. You don't have to climb a tree. You don't have to, you know, do anything specific. Just be outside. Just feel the sun on your face. Just listen to the birds in the morning. If you're reading your book and you're having a hard day, instead of sitting inside with your book, go out on the porch. You know, it's just little things, just little moments outside really can make a difference in your mental well-being.
Yeah. I'm going to quote a great poet and philosopher, Steve Otero, and say, if you like to sit, just sit outside.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's so great.
I was sitting this morning reading on my couch, and my little guy, he's 7. He came downstairs for the morning. And he comes and snuggles up next to me, and he goes, "Mom, why are you sitting out where you can hear the birds?"
Awesome.
That's a profound way to start the day.
Wow.
I should be sitting where I can hear the birds.
That's unreal.
He knows that's my favorite sound in the world is the birds. He's like, "Why are you sitting in here? You could be outside."
That's a good son.
That's so cool. Yeah. Steve, any parting words for Jennifer before we go?
As soon as you mentioned that the fact that you're part of your next adventure in your ongoing life adventure, right, is opening a bookstore, immediately in my head, I thought of there's a label we use in the government, the military specifically, and it's called force multiplier. And so you're becoming a force multiplier for all your fellow writers and artists who are creating and providing, you know, materials and books. And I'm sure you'll sell a variety of other things and objects that are related to books and literacy. So I've had that in my head to say, thank you for choosing to become a force multiplier of the written word. That is amazing. And I'm so excited for you to be embarking on this next part of your journey, because it sounds like it's going to be a really fun one. And you're going to be able to help promote so many others, you know, even though you're promoting, I'm sure, part of yourself, you're going to be promoting thousands, hundreds of thousands of others in the future. And I'm sure that that's a legacy that your family, all three of those kids, are really going to be paying attention to. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for doing all the different things that you do as far as health and wellness is concerned. But really, I've had that thought floating around in my head to say, thanks for choosing to become a force multiplier for good and literacy and the literary art forms. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for the compliment and the kind words. And thank you for using that word, because that word is awesome.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to put that in my pocket and carry it around with me. I really like that word, force multiplier. It makes you sound kind of like a superhero. Thank you.
Steve, as you often do, man, you got me a little choked up there thinking about that, because I'm such a huge, I know how profoundly impacted I was by the written word as a kid. And I can't help but think that kids are losing that skill set. And everybody's glued to screens. We've talked about that. You know, they're getting their information in TikTok videos and stuff. I get nervous when I see that schools aren't regulating phones in the classroom. I get nervous when I see the increase in screen time and everything. I love, Jennifer, that you're that force multiplier and that you're promoting reading and you're promoting the written word, and obviously it's working. Your kids are loving nature and, you know, encouraging you to be outside, which is the dream. That's what all of us need, is somebody else to say, hey, you love nature, get out there and remind us. But I couldn't agree with Steve more, being a force multiplier. And I hadn't thought about that, but that's 100% what you are. That's going in the show notes, by the way. I think it's beautiful.
That's what you guys do too. You promote, you educate people about other people's talents and skills and experiences. And that's, you know, you're making a difference in people's lives.
Thank you for that. That's the dream. That's the dream.
Yeah.
I remember the first time we talked about it, we said, who's going to listen to this? And there's a whole lot of people out there listening to it. So I couldn't be more humbled by what you just said. But, you know, thank you so much for who you are. Thank you for the human that you are. Thank you for seeing the humanity in other people and sharing yours with others. And thanks for what you're doing for the written word, poetry specifically, and really linking it to all the other aspects of wellness that you're involved in, and the community aspect of it and everything else. It's just, it's wonderful. It's what's needed right now in our world. So thank you. Thanks so much for taking time today to spend a few minutes with us. And I know we're both better for it. And we'd love to have you back sometime. I'd love to have you come talk about the bookstore and how that turned out. You know, it's just, it's such a cool thing. So thanks for being here with us today.
I appreciate it, you guys, so much. It was an honor to be here. Absolutely an honor.
And for everybody listening, until next time, do your health and well-being the best favor you can, and just get outside.
Thank you for listening to the Nature of Wellness podcast, hosted by Dr. Mark A. Campbell and Steve Otero. Follow us on Instagram at Nature of Wellness, with new content being added frequently. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe wherever you listen. The content of this podcast is for general information purposes only. Nothing should be taken as legal or medical advice. The information is not intended to replace the guidance of your healthcare providers, but to create an outlet for new discussions with them.